Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. Featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. We consider topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, exploring whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about, talk to people on the street about all kinds of different topics that affect us both locally and globally. And for this, the arts hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And I combine a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. If you want to find out more about the show, you can go to itsaquestionofbalance.com. There's podcasts there of all previous shows, and you can connect with me on social media. So again, that's itsaquestionofbalance.com. This week, as my special guest from the arts, I'm pleased to be featuring Oscar-winning actress Rita Moreno and Steve Goldblum, the writer and director of Rita's latest film, Remember Me. I covered Cinequest 2016 for the show's Arts Hour, and this is part of a series of special arts reports I'm featuring from the festival. Legendary performer Rita Moreno is one of only 12 people who've received an Oscar, Grammy, Tony and Emmy Award. She received the Oscar for West Side Story in 1961 and is still going strong at 84, starring in the new comedy film Remember Me, which had its world premiere at Cinequest 2016 Film Festival in Silicon Valley. She remains one of the busiest stars in show business, working in TV, film and theatre, and her first book, Rita Moreno, a memoir, instantly became a New York Times bestseller. I had the privilege to be invited by Cinequest founders Kathleen Powell and Halfdan Hussey to interview Rita Moreno live on stage at the world premiere of her new film, Remember Me, at the iconic California Theatre in San Jose. So let's hear that conversation now.
Hi.
Hello. Lovely to have you here. You look beautiful.
So nice to see you too. Where are you from? I can't imagine.
I'm from England.
Really?
Really. You look wonderful. I love your outfit. Beautiful.
Thank you. It's kind of playful, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it's very
My daughter makes jewelry, so this is...
Very nice. Good job, Fernanda.
And I didn't have to put out or anything. It's wonderful.
You've had such a rich and diverse career, being a maverick spirit, and you've spent your whole life in the arts. I'm wondering if you can remember your first experience of art of any kind, whether it's a book or a song, where you first realized that art can affect us on a really deep level, not just entertain us.
I was dancing from the time I could walk in Puerto Rico.
Right.
And my grandpa... Oh, look, two Puerto Ricans. Hey, for San Jose, that's a lot. My grandpa used to love to see me wiggling my tush. And he would always put on records. This was when I was a very, very little girl, you know, five years old. And I'd bop around and dance to salsa records, and his attention and the look of glee on his face said to me, this is a nice thing to do, you get appreciated.
So I
think some people are just wired that way.
Right,
know?
Yeah.
And I was. I've never done anything else but perform my whole life. I have never been a waitress. I have never been a secretary, a receptionist. I have never done anything, which of course nowadays is not possible. But in my time, that's what I did.
Yeah.
And I love it. I still love it. I love my craft. And I feel so privileged to, at the age of 84, still be doing it.
It's amazing. It's so amazing.
Yeah.
The acclaimed choreographer, Dame Gillian Lynn, she said the first day of dance school was fabulous for her because she was finally surrounded by people like her, people who needed to move, to think. So I'm wondering if that comment resonates with you at all in terms of thinking through movement. I mean, you said you were moving from a very young child. Is that something you've ever thought about?
Oh, absolutely. How you, yeah. Absolutely. When I first came here, New York City, from Puerto Rico, a friend of my mother's who was a Spanish dancer, Irene Lopez, was a Spanish dancer, and she saw me bopping around in our little ghetto apartment, and she said, you know, I think Rosita might be a good dancer. Can I take her to my dancing teacher? And my mom said, yeah. She said, would you want to go? I said, yes. And that started it all. I loved it. In this case, it was Spanish dance. Mm. I still play castanets. And when I do my concert show, I very often play them. Right. And I learned all of those beautiful Spanish dances, like the Sevillanas and La Jota and La Zambra and all kinds of farruca, flamenco. I love that kind of stuff. Yes. And I still do heel.
Oh. Yeah. I think there's a wonderful power in movement that can express emotion.
The girls wanted to make an appearance. That's what happens when you don't wear a bra. Oh, my word. My daughter probably just had a heart attack.
I was looking at your feet. So I saw nothing.
Oh, good.
On a slightly more serious note, in your...
Oh.
Not that that wasn't very powerful. You've said in your memoir that the themes of your life are scared to death, fighting to survive, and forever a foreigner in more ways than can be imagined. So many of us live with fear of failure or success or many things. I'm wondering how you've managed your fear in your life in such a way to allow you to achieve so much.
Oh, what a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm going to try. Fear really is about failure, I think, in every respect. And when I came to this country, I was made to feel that I didn't have much value. Even as a very little girl, I remember being called names like Spick and Wop and Gold Tooth and all the words you hear in West Side Story, Garlic Mouth. And if you're young enough, you're still a very tender little person. Mm. And you tend to believe what people tell you. And if people tell you that you don't have worth, you believe it.
Yeah.
So I grew up thinking that I had very little value, that I was inferior to most people. I really did believe that. Mm. I know it's hard to think of that and then look at this woman who's, you know, trying to hide her boobs, but... But I had a very, very hard time for many, many, many years. Mm. Those are the kind of things I didn't tell my mama.
Yes.
Because I instinctively knew there was nothing she could do about it.
Mm.
So I kept those things to myself. And when kids would bully me in the schoolyard or on the way home, there were a lot of little gangs then. I never told her anything because I felt it would just be a huge burden on someone who couldn't do anything about it. So I kept it to myself. But those things have a cost. You know, that kind of secrecy has a cost.
Yes.
And, you know, I ended up in psychotherapy for a bunch of years, about 8 years, much, much, much later on. It's actually one of the most constructive things I ever did for myself.
Mm.
But... But fear, anxiety was so much a part of my life.
Mm.
I can't begin to tell you how really severe it was, how I felt ugly, how I felt I was too dark, my hair was too curly. I just felt such an outsider for way, way, way too many years.
Yeah.
So I certainly empathize with people who have those kind of problems now. Mm. And what happens very often when you're having that kind of problem is that very often you get very angry. Mm. And your anger becomes very misplaced.
Right.
And,
yes.
You know, that's what you see a lot of people doing terrible things to each other mm. because their anger has no, or they think it has no outlet, and it comes out this way.
Yes.
Which is why I finally understood, I give the longest answers.
No.
Which is why I finally understood that language was very, very, very important for me, mm. that I had to learn it, that I had to learn how to express my feelings in the most precise way that I could, because language is the road to being understood, mm. at least so I thought.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, you have these barriers of race that you've spoken about, and also being an immigrant coming to a new country, and also being a woman. You started your career in the era of the infamous casting couch, when there was a very predatory approach to young women entering the performing arts. We've seen improvements in how women are treated, but I'm interested to know from your experience how the industry's changed over your career, and also what further advances perhaps you'd like to see in that regard.
Well, with respect to the casting couch, I don't even know if that really, really exists anymore. I don't know.
Anymore?
I mean, not at my age. No one's going to be, you know, killing themselves to get me in the sack. Well, there are a couple. Do I see any comers? That's a woman. Woo! And you're a dirty old man, but never mind. I wouldn't know if that still exists. Let me put it that way.
No.
I mean, now if someone's interested, they'll kind of let me know pretty quickly.
Right. Yeah.
In those days, but I remember very clearly certain producers and people of position mm. in the film industry calling me up and trying to get me into bed. And that was absolutely frightening. I remember one in particular, Buddy Adler, who ran, after Zanuck, he ran 20th Century Fox. Mm. And he kept calling me and calling me and calling me. And I kept not being home because I had three other roommates. And I kept saying to them, tell him I'm not here. And finally, I remember after 2 months of calling, he finally left a message, which was, okay, I give up. But it was scary because you could lose your job.
Yes, yeah.
You know, they could just say, well, the hell with her.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty others who can show their gratitude.
Right,
and
yeah.
It was very, very frightening.
Yes, yeah, very frightening. And of course, that has happened in other industries as well, but we have seen an improvement in that, so hopefully it's the same in film. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my conversation with Academy Award-winning actress Rita Moreno. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more of my conversation with Rita after these messages.
The music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland. Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Ocean's flat, but steamer lane. No white horses to play the game. About you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, babe, it just goes nowhere. It's a
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guest hour, and right now we're featuring a special arts report from the Cinequest 2016 Film Festival. I was very happy to be invited by the founders of the festival to interview legendary performer Rita Moreno. So let's hear the rest of my conversation with Rita. You've got this wonderful career with many glittering moments that people select to highlight, as we saw in the film at the beginning. But I'm wondering what stands out for you. What aspects of your career and life are you most proud of?
Most proud of?
Mm.
Oh, it has to be the Oscar for West Side Story.
Yeah.
I mean,
You finally got to play a role where you were a Puerto Rican. Yeah.
At least, you know, that was the first one. Then. Actually, at the same time, I got the Golden Globe for West Side Story, which a lot of people don't know about. But, you know, recently, my life has just been turned around with the, the Kennedy Center Honors and the Screen Actors Guild, which is a Life Achievement Award, which is given to you by your peers. That's almost more important to me than the Kennedy Center Honors. And you know, tonight, who would have guessed? Who would have thunk? Every time something amazing like that happens to me, my mind immediately, when I was told that the Kennedy Center Honors were coming up in December for me, along with George Lucas and Carole King, all these amazing people, the first thing that happens to me is my head and my heart immediately go to Puerto Rico. Mm. And I see myself as a little girl with a huge bow on my head that my mom used to put on my head, playing with these little bitty little frogs called coqui in Puerto Rico, which was something I used to do for fun with my other little kid friends. And that's the first thing I always think of, and I think, my God, what a journey, what an astonishing. How did this happen?
Mm.
I'm always amazed, truly amazed, and grateful.
Yeah. So now you have these awards. You mentioned the Kennedy Center and the Screen Actors Guild. You've got the Presidential Medal of Freedom, as well as the National Medal of Arts, which is on behalf of the American people. Do you feel good enough now? I mean, you said you spend most of your life, you know, not feeling good enough.
Well, that's really a great question, because a lot of actors hang on to their sadness very often. Do I feel... Well, I'm always surprised. I don't know, but I'm deeply surprised. It's like a who, me kind of feeling. It's, you know, once in a while I go look at those two shelves in my living room and I just say... Wow. Wow. I can never quite get over it. You know, my daughter says to me, I will say to my daughter sometimes, I met so-and-so, some famous person. I can't think of the person at the moment, but I say, and they love me. They think I'm wonderful. And she says, when are you going to get over that? And I'm still saying, look who loves me. It happened with Fred Astaire. It happened with Michael Jackson.
But I think it's nice to keep that sense of wonder, because then you're not believing your own PR then. Some people disappear into their own PR and just think they're so wonderful. But for you to keep that sense of wonder.
Well, I certainly do.
Yes, so your feet are on the ground.
For sure. My clog's on the ground.
In your memoir, you say that from the age of 5, you felt you had to pretend to be someone that you were not, that you constantly had a voice in your head saying, who do you think you are? And that you were always playing a part, whether it was the smoldering, sexy Spitfire or the award-winning Hispanic heroine. Reading your memoir, you're obviously a very thoughtful person who's really worked on self-awareness. Do you feel you've come to a place now where you really know who you are? For you.
I do.
Yes.
I do. And I think I'm swell. But, boy, you have no idea how long it took to be able to say that without feeling embarrassed. Mm. And I do believe, really, that therapy helped me enormously. Mm. But he could, as I said to him when I finally left therapy, I said to my doctor, my psychoanalyst, I said, you couldn't have done it without me. And he said, you're absolutely right. But it took me longer than that. You know, leaving therapy doesn't mean that I felt I was perfect at that point. I think I'm as perfect as I'm ever going to be. You know, that's it. This is it.
Yeah.
This is it. With my temper and whatever else, this is who I am. Yeah. And I accept that person, and I accept her with gratitude. I'm so happy to just be here. I tried to kill myself once.
Mm.
You know, I took pills.
Yes.
So I'm just, when I say I appreciate every moment, I appreciate every moment that I'm still here. And if I had been successful at that, I wouldn't be pointing to this that the soul of my life, my daughter Fernanda.
As evidenced by your receiving, you haven't the Oscar, the Emmy, the Tony, the Grammy, your careers encompass singing and dancing and acting. Does it feel like they all come from within the same creative place within you? Or does each of those reflect a different part of you?
No, I think they really all come from exactly the same place.
Yes.
I started as a Spanish dancer. And then I started to sing on my own, no lessons. And it all comes from exactly the same place. It's my favorite place of mine.
Mm.
I love to go there, and I love it. I love to act. I get such a great feeling when I get to do roles in different venues. It's marvelous. And I think the reason it's marvelous for me is that I am vain enough, I suppose, to love the idea that I can actually make people laugh, or I can make them very sad and teary in a role of something that I'm doing. And that's heady stuff.
Mm.
That's powerful.
Yes.
And I remember the day that I realized I had that power. I was playing Serafina delle Rose in Tennessee Williams's A Rose Tattoo. And at the end of the when we were taking our bows, people were standing up. I've never had people do that before.
Mm.
And this is before that became the fashion, by the way.
Right, yeah, that's true.
And it was an amazing revelation.
Mm.
I thought, wow, I can do this. I can move people. It's irreplaceable.
Mm.
I love it. And if any actor ever tells you that they hate all that stuff, that attention and that affection from an audience, they're full of shit.
You've played some quite different roles. How do you go about embodying a character? How do you get into the head?
I've played some really very diverse characters, like the nun in Oz, the HBO. It's amazing. Amazing series. And I remember when I got that, because till then I'd been doing, you know, a lot of very sexy ladies, the usual stuff, which was boring.
Yes.
And because most of them were stereotypical parts. And when I got this, I remember calling my daughter. I was in New York and she was in L.A., Fernanda. And I said, hey, I'm going to do a series. I'd never done one. And I said, I'm going to do it for HBO. And she said, wow, what are you playing? What's the show? And I said, well, it's about life in a maximum security penitentiary. And she says, what are you playing? And I said, and I swallowed hard. And I said, well, I'm a... I'm playing a nun. And there was this long silence. And then I heard this. Even my daughter. But I got a lot of really wonderful recognition for that and respect in the industry, which is interesting. Yeah.
Well, it's obviously a testament to your acting that it's so different from your natural character and you
truly
pulled it off. Yes.
Yeah.
Some people think that creating art can be a way of processing trauma and healing ourselves. And I think, you know, you speaking about your journey through your life, it certainly seems that that might have been the case for you. I'm wondering, do you see a place in the world for the arts as a healing mechanism?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And what breaks my heart is how many art programs have been canceled in schools. I think that's terribly important. Music and art and acting for children who don't want necessarily to become a big actor or a star or even just, it's great. It's very creative. It makes you look inside yourself. That's what acting does. You really have to dig deep. And I remember one time I was standing on the set with Tom Fontana, who wrote Oz. Mm. And he had a young nephew, a young man of about 14, who was on the set. And I had a scene, which he was watching on the monitor, where I had to look at a picture of my husband, and the tears started to come down. And the boy afterward, after he said, cut, and that's a take. The boy came to me and he says, how do you do that? And I said, oh, honey, there is a well. it's always full. And you just have to be able to access it. Mm. And a lot of people who want to be actors can't.
Mm. Yeah.
It's you really have to go down there into the down and dirty, into that pond scum, and bring it up and use it. And a lot of actors can't do that. So they're a certain kind of actor.
Yes. Yeah.
But you know, when he asked me that, Tom just started to laugh because he knew. He knows where that comes from. It's very deep, very profound. Sometimes it's very dark.
Mm. Yeah. And I think that you make a good point about you don't have to necessarily be going into the arts to get a lot out of it, to be creative in it. It translates into so many different areas.
My grandson Cameron right now is doing a lot of plays at school. He's one of those extremely bright little boys who also writes like a beast. And he's doing theater. I know he's not going to be an actor, but it's wonderful for him. I'm thrilled that he's doing it. Because it also takes a kind of bravery to do it. You have to have a little bit of courage.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. We're about to see your latest film, Remember Me. What do
I've
you...
never seen it!
Well, it's wonderful for all of us to see it with you for the first time. What do you love about this character?
This is such... Let me first tell you how I got the script. It was sent to me by, I think it was the producers, two wonderful women. And, yes, women. And I remember thinking, okay, this is a very, very tiny little movie. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get much. This, in terms of a salary, it's going to be a joke. You know, it'll be Screen Actors Guild, what they call minimum, Screen Actors Guild minimum. But I read it and I said, oh, I want to do this. It's very funny. What's going to be hard watching it tonight is all the moments in the film where we kept breaking up. I mean, we've just... I mean, I think we used more of our budget saying, okay, let's do it again, and please try not to laugh this time. It's just very funny. And the two young men, you will love them. And you'll meet them here after the movie, so that'll be fun. I adore them. I call them my children. They're talented, and they're funny, and they're clever, and they love me, which matters a great deal.
Yes.
I love them.
Well, your passion for your art is clearly as strong as ever. Thank you so much for coming and sharing aspects of your life with us tonight.
Well, you were wonderful. You asked great questions. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and my special guests this week, the Oscar-winning actress Rita Moreno. That was at the end of my conversation with her there at the Cinequest Film Festival at the world premiere of her new film, Remember Me. And coming up, my next guest is the writer and director of Rita's film. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Danielle and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore, and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guests this week, the Academy Award-winning actress Rita Moreno, and coming up, Steve Goldblum, the writer and director of Rita's latest award-winning film, Remember Me, which had its world premiere at the Cinequest 2016 Film Festival, where it won the Audience Award for Best Comedy. And after I carried out the interview with Rita on stage at the California Theatre, we then had the screening of the premiere, and after the screening, I was fortunate to get some time with the film's writer and director, Steve Goldblum, and he's a writer, producer and performer based in Los Angeles. In 2014, he created and hosted the PBS series Everything But the News, which was ranked Best Digital Series by USA Today in its first year. In February 2016, Steve launched a new sketch series as writer-performer with AOL entitled On the Brink of Greatness.
greatness. Steve's directorial work includes creating the series Brief But Spectacular, a weekly interview series for PBS NewsHour. And Steve, who is a Canadian and American citizen, runs his production company Second Peninsula out of Los Angeles. And Remember Me is Steve's feature film debut. And as I mentioned, that stars Academy Award winner Rita Moreno. So let's hear my conversation with Steve. So I'm here live at Cinequest with Steve Goldblum, who is the director, writer and producer of one of the films that's having a world premiere here, Remember Me, starring Rita Moreno. And I wanted to ask you, Steve, can you remember the first piece of art that had an effect on you on a deep level, that you realized art could really affect us as well as entertain us?
Well, first piece of art, I'd have to say comedy, probably, was radio, a type of the 2,000-year-old man, the record, the Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner record that I probably was too young to really understand, but it's the first time I can imagine my family laughing, everybody laughing, my uncles and my dad laughing and not really understanding what they were laughing about, but knowing that I wanted to be involved in that. I think the humor was too sophisticated at the time. But that kind of craft, now I appreciate it and I really enjoy it. At the time, I didn't understand it. I just knew I needed to.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's one of the elements of all kinds of art, I think, that's really interesting. There is this nonverbal, almost energetic quality to great art that affects us very deeply, I think, and sometimes we don't even know how or why, but it can also be very connecting, which sounds like what happened with you and your family.
That's right, yeah. That's true.
Nodding your head there. So would you say you grew up in a creative environment?
I think so. I have a lot of funny people in my family. There's also a lot of people who aren't funny. You know, there's two sides of the family. But they're funny in a way that they don't even know about it. So I think I did grow up in a creative family, definitely. People did either professional careers creatively, or they did, some did music. And the arts were certainly always embraced and encouraged in my family to, as a form of expression. Hmm. And I think I probably gained more confidence in that in my 20s, when I was in university or just after university. And the biggest lesson being that the stuff that makes you the stuff that scares you the most is worth pursuing. Mm. Like the feeling that you're really, whenever you have that feeling like I probably shouldn't show that side of me, I should probably hold back, is the wink that you should absolutely show that side.
Yes.
Because it's gonna, you know, it's gonna draw focus. Mm. And so I think I've learned that over the last 10 years. I'm still learning that. Even in this movie, I learned to let myself be a little more vulnerable. In the next movie, hopefully, I'll be even more vulnerable.
Okay.
And allow to, you know, I like pushing myself and taking risks and encouraging that in other people.
Yes. Well, I think you're right. There's a huge payoff to doing that. But it is very frightening, isn't it? And for a lot of people, what you have, even if it's not great, is better than that, taking that risk. Yeah. What attracted you to film as your art form?
I think I started making little movies when I was younger. I liked the control of it. I liked the improvisational aspect of it. And I liked taking an idea and making it a reality. Like, I loved writing this movie. I mean, I did too much in this movie. I wrote, directed, and acted in it. You know, let's be honest, this is too much. I wouldn't do that again. I'm glad we did it. I think it's a small movie, and we made it work, and it's the best. I love it. But to be able to take an idea, I'm really most proud of my abilities as a writer and a performer. Mm-hmm. So to be able to take an idea, like a death scene, and to be able to put it on the screen and have characters come in and really sell that and show the sadness and the silliness and the nervousness that all culminates in a scene, I mean, in the movie where our grandfather dies and we're telling jokes to someone who's dead. Mm. You know, we don't know that he's dead. We think he's resting.
Yes.
And we're telling jokes and then getting a nervous laughter when you have to accept the information. I, as a kid, somebody, my dad used to, you know, if anybody ever told me that someone had died when I was little, I would break out into nervous laughter. That was a problem I always had. Yes. So, and I probably still have it if you test me.
Yeah.
So it's you know, and I think people, when I hear people laugh in the theater, it's like, oh, we're all alike.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Everybody shares those little idiosyncrasies in common.
I think that's an interesting scene, too. It's, you know, the beginning of the film. It's interesting because death has become such a taboo subject in a way, especially I think in the West, maybe even particularly in America, where people don't want to talk about it. I mean, as soon as he dies, they do want to whisk him off and, you know, away from her. And is that something that you were keen to express as well, sort of how we deal with death in our culture?
Yeah, absolutely. And how we deal with the relationship with our grandparents and how it evolves, and with our parents and how it evolves from a caretaker to a caregiver, you know. And I remember just, you know, being at the whim of my grandparents, and then of course you watch them deteriorate and you watch them before come into a weaker version of themselves at times, and it's very sad. And it's that relationship changes. So, and these two characters, the self-involved grandsons, one Vincent, the other Barry, handle it really differently. One is a war correspondent afraid of battle, and the other is a comedian in a town that is not very conducive to comedy or Uber driving, which he does. So they handle things differently. One is really just raw and honest and who he is, and the other is anything who he is. And so being sharing company forces them to grow. And I think it's a coming of age story, both at 30 and at 80, with their relationship with their grandmother, and how they address death and tell her what's happening.
And you're also addressing perception of aging, and at the beginning she's almost like a zombie because she's over medicated, the character played by Rita Moreno, and then she comes into her own and she's actually full of life and still a very functioning person. And I was wondering, you know, there are old people who are not wise and there are young people who are not full of life and vibrancy. Why do you think we don't just judge people on their individual merits? Why do you think there is such ageism in the West?
I don't know where that comes from, but it's so sweeping in how we do marginalize this
great... Particularly women, too. I mean, the film is about an aging woman.
Particularly women. I've seen it in men, though. I was recently at a wedding, and there was a guy who was 93. I was in the wedding, my friends, and this 93-year-old man is standing there, and he's sitting there. And I really am drawn to old people. I mean, it's not just in this movie, but I really am. I'm more interested in hanging out with someone in their 90s than I am with someone in their 30s or anything. So I start talking to him, and I don't really have a filter because of my experience in just dealing with people who are older than me. And so we're talking about everything.
Yes.
And you can see the fire in his eyes come because all of a sudden I'm not speaking to him like he's a child.
Yes.
Or I'm speaking to him, and he said to me, he says, so many people just tolerate me.
Huh.
And he said, I got thank you. And he was funny, and so he'd been in the war. He was at Normandy, you know, like he had this marvelous life, and it's so much capacity to love and be funny and enjoy life. And I think if we took the time a little more to see that, it's tremendously rewarding both ways, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been fortunate to have some amazing old people in my life. I don't actually have anyone in my life who's been old and decrepit at all. So perhaps I've just been lucky, but my image of aging is of these fabulous people who are still continuous learners. Maybe that's the difference too. I think maybe that's what keeps you young as you age, is that you're still interested in life and experiencing new things. I don't know if that's something you've thought about.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, the capacity to love and enjoy life and to laugh.
The film is very humorous in many places, as well as being poignant. Do you feel humor has a power to deliver messages that maybe drama does not?
Absolutely. I think that it runs both ways. You know, the drama that we try to tell, I mean, that levity in the drama makes the medicine go down, and the same is true with comedy. I think if you're just laughing all the time, if you're trying to make a big, big comedy, people can get kind of tired of that. So I'm really proud of, and I do pay a tribute to the producers, Heather and Nanu from Sparklight Films, because they pushed me to be sensitive and tender in moments here when I thought, I don't think that'll play. I couldn't imagine me lying in bed with Rita Moreno and consoling her. I knew I wanted that to happen. I just didn't really want to be the one to do it. I didn't know that I could sell that because we had just been sort of nasty in a hot tub sex scene before, and I was like, I don't think those will pair
not
well.
Not you and Rita Moreno. I should tell listeners.
Let's clarify that. Not certainly not during the filming. Yeah. When the cameras were rolling. But to be able to pair those scenes and hopefully sell that, that to me is the most rewarding thing, that we could pair those up together. This, you know, raunchy scene before and this heartwarming scene where he doesn't go for the condom. He goes for grandma.
Yeah.
That's going to be very confusing to your viewers, but you know, you'll have to see the movie.
I think your character has a very interesting arc in the film. I mean, it's interesting to see how, I mean, he's sort of just almost as clueless at the end, but he develops this kind of emotional sensitivity. He allows himself to open up, doesn't he, in a way that allows him to do what you just said, to not think of himself so much, I guess.
Yeah, the irony is that he's a war correspondent afraid of battle and reading news, reading war headlines, and he avoids an assignment, his first assignment to go to Beirut, and instead goes to his family. And of course, the family, it turns out to be worse than any kind of Middle Eastern conflict. And it's a battlefield in its own right. And he his instinct is to leave. Mm. He says, I got to take off and go back to work. But the cousin forces him to stay through. And of course, he grows and I think comes of age. So it's a family that I like to say loves each other, but they may have forgotten why.
Yes.
And the movie serves as and the road trip as a reminder of that.
Yeah. Obviously, everyone's important in the film, but it was pivotal, I would say, to get the right person playing the grandmother. How did you come to think of Rita Moreno for that role?
Well, we always had her in mind, myself and the producers, and wrote to her skill set and thought that the character would just be perfect for it. And the fact that she read the script and agreed to do it within a weekend of reading the script was, you know, we gave it to her on a Friday, she confirmed on a Monday. That was the best news because it really became a real movie. I mean, who knows if we'd be sitting here even talking if she wasn't in the movie. You just don't know. Right. So when that happened, I think everybody raised their game. And it was exciting for the crew. I mean, look, you know, the crew's, if it's just me and the other guy, that's fun. And that might be fun. But with her, everybody, the same way when you had your great Q&A with her on the stage, I mean, there's this dignity. Everybody stands up. And I think it was like that for all 17 days on set. You know you're in the presence of this legend.
Yes.
And you know, I'm the one directing her. So you can't believe I was getting much sleep. But of course, I became more comfortable in that role. And she's just totally intolerant of any kind of BS. Mm. She's very straight. She's a straight shooter. And I remember giving her a note the first day or first 2 days, and I said, because I really, the first movie I'd ever directed, and of course with an EGOT winner. And I said, I think in this scene the character's going to be thinking the arc. We gotta think about the scene before and the trajectory of the arc. And she just looked at me and she goes, why don't you just tell me what you want me to do? And then I just said, why don't you just say the lines faster and stop laughing at the end? And she said, perfect.
Great.
So she just wasn't precious about that crap. Yeah. I think she's just at that point where she's like, she's so good.
Yeah.
She really just can do it. I mean, she can do it. We're going to say this is a sad scene. She has that well, like she told you. She can deep do it. So it's not, and that was very helpful for me. And that was how we conduct the rest of the movie, and then we got along famously.
Yes, yeah. It's a wonderful film. It's dealing with very important issues. Is that something that you actively want to do through your work? Do you want to be dealing with messages for people, making people think, as well as entertain them?
I think if you're going to be spending this long on a project, it's more helpful if it has a message.
Yes.
I've done the other way around. I mean, the stuff that I do, some of it's funny, but, kind of forgettable.
Just more disposable.
Yeah, and I think so. A lot of the content's like that, and that's good.
Yeah.
But if you're going to spend a year, maybe 2 years, making a movie and seeing it through, I mean, isn't that great to become part of the record as something that has a message and is of substance and captures her brilliance. And so I, the fact that this is a movie that will exist, it melts my heart. I'm telling you, I'm sort of just coming to terms with it now. Yeah. But it's the greatest feeling because I know that it'll be out there, and to have people of all ages and people, you know, some elderly people come up to me after the screening too and just say that you're tapping into something here. That's the nicest thing anybody can say to me, especially coming from that greatest generation.
Yes, yeah. This whole thing of aging, have you ever been discriminated against with age at all? Like you're too young to be doing something, or have you had an experience of that or not really?
No, I've been pretty lucky. I mean, I'm a white cis male, 32 years old. So there's not, you know, I'm aware. I think what I need to do is be aware of that. I've had too many advantages and too many green lights, and you know, come from a nice family in Canada where they were very supportive, and so I try to be mindful of that because there's a lot of talented people in the arts that may not have that opportunity.
I just wanted to say that often awards do tend to go to the like really serious, you know, hard films or whatever, but I actually think that it's harder to make comedy than it is to make drama. And I don't necessarily mean farce, but the kind of comedy that your film is, where it is real and it is reflecting real things from life and creating insights through character, and it's funny. I think that is much harder to do than a serious drama where there's lots of pain and suffering, personally.
Right.
So I think it's quite an accomplishment what you've done. So.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, I wish you all the best with the film. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And thanks again to Rita Moreno and Steve Goldblum there talking about the new film, award-winning film, Remember Me. And if you want more information about the film, you can go to the website rememberme.film.com. rememberme.film.com. It's still making the rounds of film festivals right now, but if you watch the website, and also they have a Facebook page, then you can get information of when it's going to be in theatres. And remember, you can visit the show website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, to look at all the previous podcasts that we've done. We've had some wonderful guests and some great topic discussions as well. So I hope you might go to itsaquestionofbalance.com, check those out, maybe connect with me on social media. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to you joining me again next time. We'll